Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look.
Yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. Positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See, Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn, and the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging that gold, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the limits to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life. From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Well, peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and I'm your host, Bree. And I want to apologize. We were experiencing technical difficulties as a result of Blog Talk Radio changing their voice prompts in order to start the show. So for all the callers, or for actually all the listeners that got dead air, that's why we are on the air now. And we are ready to receive your calls, and for you to do so, you got to call in the 424-220-1862. That number, again, is 424-220-1862. Tonight's topic is to be Black in America, what does it mean now? And this is part two of our discussion. Tonight, we're going to be joined again by having in the studio online Dr. Hackley, Dr. Jeremiah Hackley, who is the author of The Letter, which gives a complete 521-point breakdown on the Willie Lynch letters. And we're also going to be joined tonight by one of our guests, George Cook. George Cook is the New Jersey Board of Education president in Hillside, New Jersey, and he's also an activist and a politician and a really good brother. I had a very nice conversation with George today, and we're looking forward to being joined by him. And as a matter of fact, I believe he's on the line, so let's bring him on the line right now. Peace and blessings, George.
Hey, how you doing? Hello to everybody out there.
Well, thank you for your patience. We had some technical difficulties, but we seem to get it back online. So we are discussing to be Black in America. What does it mean now? Why don't you give the listeners some background information about who you are, what you do, and what you've been doing, and about some of the interesting books that you've written. I understand you're completing your third book. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm in my early 40s. Graduated high school, did a little bit of college. I spent time in the service, first Gulf War. Upon coming out, I pretty much did various odd jobs. And then I had always written, so I'd never stopped writing. And for some reason, around 2008, I really started writing again. And that caught the eye of some people. Some of the things I wrote in my first book, Let's Talk Honestly, as poems and essays about conditions in Black America, that caught the eye of some people, oddly enough, to ask me to run for office. Which was surprising. I didn't win the first time, but second time I ran, I was elected to a local board of education. And try to do everything we can, working with the kids to make sure they get they have that foundation, they have their education. Without that, you know, just, there's nothing else. But I've always been active as far as Boy Scouts mentoring. I'm part of the Million Father March, where we encourage fathers to walk their kids the first day of school. And I'm a big believer in giving back to the community, especially the men in the community, giving back, helping out, doing whatever we can so we're not always asking for things. And I'm a big believer in taking care of self, doing for self. That's if there's any one message I could get across to our people, that would definitely be it.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons why I asked you to join our discussion was because I gathered this about reading some background on what you're doing in your community. And I want to know, when I asked you to join our discussion, the second part of our discussion, I mean, what do you feel about, what is it that you feel about this topic, to be black in America now, to be in your early 40s? There are a lot of terms that are being thrown out there, post-racism, and I want to send a shout-out to my friend Kevin Powell, who's a New Jersey, he's a New Jersey police officer, and he's been one of my hype men for me for the show since its inception, and we talk about a lot of social issues before I go on the air. And you living in New Jersey, have you heard about one of the recent laws that was passed? Whether three or four youths or gathering is considered a gang? Were you aware of that?
I wasn't aware of a gang, but I know they were trying to pass laws because of the flash mobs. Because for a minute, the flash mobs were becoming a big issue. And the reason it became a big issue is because of where they were gathering. They weren't necessarily gathering in black communities.
Mm-hmm.
These kids would travel to go to other communities. Like South Orange is a more affluent community. So
mm-hmm.
kids from, say, North, they would text all day. They would meet up in South Orange at a certain part of like a real big open space with stores, restaurants. So the kids would just congregate there. Before that, it was never an issue.
Right.
But I did know there was concerns about the flash mobs, the kids. I mean, they didn't cause any harm. It was just that there were a lot of them. So I guess that became an issue.
Now, I'm going to bring one of my guest callers on the line right now. His name is Alex Leaf. He's a consistent guest caller. And he happens to – I even talked to you earlier about this brother. He and I have been friends for 41 years, and I'm rather proud of him. He's a television and movie producer, and he's an activist in his own right. I'm bringing him on the line. Alex, peace and blessings, brother. How you doing?
What's up, Bray? I'm doing great. Looking forward to part two. Sound like a movie here. Part one, part two.
That's right. I want to introduce you to our most esteemed panelist tonight. This is George Cook from Hillside, New Jersey. George, this is my very good friend, Alex.
George,
how you doing,
my brother?
Doing all right.
You doing all right,
I'm not used to being called esteemed, but I'll take it.
Okay, well, well, we like to believe that on the Bree Life Radio Show, everyone who participates is esteemed in their own right. You know, we all add value here. So that's where we coming from tonight.
Oh, that's good to know.
That's good to know. Okay, so, Alex, where you're coming in at, George and I, we were talking about a new law that has been passed in New Jersey as per some information that I just got from a friend of mine who's a police officer there, that states that when three or four or more are gathering, it constitutes a gang. Now, what is that going to say when these teenagers and young adults, because of the racial energy that's being provoked in the air right now when people are gathering and protesting? What's going to happen? Do you see like there's sort of, you know, an underlining motive possibly even for passing such a law?
Well, for me, being an African-American male and the way I've studied and viewed and watched history up to this point in my life, there's always an undercurrent in a law being passed like that. And the undercurrent is always the true target, which tends to be black youth. They'll get a few white youths in there, some Spanish youth in there, whatever the case is. But the target is typically the black youth, because the prisons are filling up with black youth quicker than any other thing, than any other ethnicity. Mm-hmm. So, I say that to say, you know, we have a constitutional right to vote. They passed that. That's constitutionally right. We have the vote. But then they add this one small proviso, this addendum. If you have a felony, you lose your right to vote. So then they make it easier to go out and arrest blacks and give them felonies to lose the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So they slapped you both ways. You know, I've seen these things over and over again. They'll make you think, oh, it's a law for everybody. Anybody caught in the mob is going to be arrested. But the true target, the undercurrent, is always people of color, as I see it.
What would you say about that, George?
Well, what was very interesting to me is to see how the law is enforced. I'm like the brother mentioned, at first they will get a few white people, a few Hispanics. I'd be interested to see what the punishment is, though, when they catch them. Is that going to be fair and even across the board? That's what I would really look at. But like I said, I think this is a reaction to the flash mobs that were, they've died down a bit, but I know in the more affluent, which we all know, which that's cold for, they had an issue with the flash mobs, kids coming from poor neighborhoods. And those rich neighborhoods, they have money. They have access to state senators, to actual lawmakers. They complain, something gets done. I believe that's what happened in this case, but I'm very interested to see how what happens when the kids are caught. Do they simply tell them to go home, or do they put them in a car? That's what I would be interested in seeing.
Yeah, because what happens typically, George, when black youth are detained by police. We typically get beat up, shot, thrown in the car, you know, spend a night in a cell or whatever the case may be, and the others get slapped on the wrist. Now, there are exceptions to these rules, but we know what's been happening to us. We can't turn a blind eye to that. And the question is why? You know, why are we treated differently? Why do we have to go around the world in a day to get simple justice and nobody else has to do that? Why?
I think that's true because when a black kid gets caught paint spray paint on the wall, he's going to jail tonight. They call the white kid's parents. The white kid's parents promise he'll paint the wall on a Saturday, and it's all done. Everything's peachy keen. So I do think there's two sets of rules for everybody.
A double standard. A double standard injustice.
That's right.
Well, what are we thinking about? I don't know if anyone had an opportunity. George, thank you very much for sending me the link to your blog. Why don't you tell? I want you at this time to tell the listeners first about the books that you've written and what they're about, and then also talk about your blog.
Yeah, well, like I said, the first book was Let's Talk Honestly. It was a book of poetry and essays about things that go on in the black community. I actually got a few awards, a few accolades for an essay in there titled The Last KKK Meeting, in which the KKK decided to give it up because we as blacks, we're doing a better job of killing each other and putting each other down. And I wrote a second book, a follow-up. My third book was a little bit off the beaten path. It had nothing to do with it. It was actually a book about, you know, Zombies Living Dead. It was just something a little different, just to do something different. I did that. With the blog, though, what I do on my blog is I try to follow stories that don't get a lot of coverage in the mainstream about African Americans, the stuff that even we in our own community don't really hear about. And I started back in the actual first blog was 2008, and I was lucky that that's when the Jenna Six story broke. So I had CNN calling me. I had a lot of major news people calling me because they had never heard of it. They didn't know how to cover it. They didn't know what was going on. So I try to cover those stories, try to get ahead of them, so we know what's going on. So we don't hear about these things once they're full blown. So when somebody comes with us, oh, you don't know what happened, we can say, no, I do know what happened. This actually happened a month ago. You just caught up to it. A lot of times when stories break, they've been out there for a while. The mainstream media just hasn't caught up to it. So I want us to be educated to know what's going on so we don't get caught by surprise, not just with those topics, but with education, things such as Pell Grants, when changes are going on, when laws are being changed. Like you just mentioned, that's something parents need to know when their kids are going out the house to ensure their kids are informed. So those are the type of things I try to cover with my blog.
That's good. That's good. Also, when you your blog, did you happen to mention the Trayvon Martin story? Because as we all have been finding out, this actually happened in the beginning of February, but we in mainstream didn't find out about it until the end of March.
Yeah, I found out maybe a week or two after it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were writing about it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the story started to break.
Okay.
Like you said, it had happened early on, and it didn't, for a minute there, it didn't really seem to be gaining traction.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, next thing you know, all of you getting all these hits on your blog, and it blew up. But what's happening now, and especially with CNN, CNN is keeping more of an eye on bloggers and what's going on. But like I said, they really got caught flat-footed with the Jenna 6 story. So now they're really keeping an eye on what's going on in the blogosphere so they don't get caught so late. So the mainstream, they're doing a better job. But like I said, it used to be you could get a story like that and have it for maybe a month before the mainstream media caught on. Now they're getting a lot more savvy. So you might have a story 2 weeks before the mainstream media jumps on and just dominates it.
Okay.
But the only reason they're getting savvy, George, is because there's pressure to cover more incidents of injustice with black people. Otherwise, they wouldn't give a damn. Because, I'm going to tell you, black people go missing every day, killed by cops or whoever else. And we still hearing about Natalie Holloway. We still hearing about JonBenet Ramsey. JonBenet Ramsey's been dead 15 years. Yes, it was a tragedy, but she's been dead 15 years because of a little white girl. So we still adding value to that. 15 years? What about the young black girl that went missing yesterday or last week? You know, black life is devalued. And maybe we have something to do with our own devaluation because of our own wretchedness. But at the same time, we have a lot and have had a lot to overcome in this country and in this world in general. To try to kill some of those stereotypes and value. We hurt ourselves a lot with these gang banging and these different kind of things that we do. We just give them ammunition. Like you said, the Klan put the sheet down and said, well, they doing it for us. Well, we got to put our sheets on. Let's put the sheet back on the bed and let them kill each other. Because we're doing it for them.
Well,
the Klan could take the dunce caps off, because that's what they wear. They wear dunce caps and sheets, and they go out like fools, or they used to go out like fools. I don't know what they do now. But there's no need for it now, because all they have to do is destroy our minds like they've been doing for the past 300-400 years and sit back and watch the fireworks and watch us destroy each other. And that's what we've done.
Right. Well, also, I'd like to discuss, and I know that I, because of my good friend George here, I had the opportunity to take a look at his blog page today, and his most recent posting is of a black woman in Florida who stood her ground, and now she stands in jail. Her name is Marissa Alexander, and she's currently facing 20 years in prison for standing her ground. Her husband beat her while she was pregnant. After yet another beating, and I'm reading this directly from George's blog, after yet another beating, Alexander fired a warning shot into the ceiling. That shot saved her life. Prosecutor Angela Corey did not take into account that Marissa Alexander had a court injunction against her crazed husband. She had given birth 9 days later, and what does it say? It says she was trained to use a weapon and earned a concealed weapons permit. Now, her husband was abusing her, in short, and I'll let George take it from here, but her husband was abusing her, and the only way that she could put an end to her abuse, and she was 9 months pregnant, she shot him. And
this story,
I'll
so
let
mad.
You take it, George.
Yeah. This one makes me so mad because as stupid as the stand your ground laws are, if there was any situation where stand your ground would apply, it's a pregnant woman being beat, because not only is she protecting herself, she's protecting her unborn child. And just to clarify, what she did was when she got confronted, she didn't shoot him, she shot in the ceiling. She didn't even shoot him. She shot the ceiling.
No, that's right. I'm sorry. She didn't shoot him. Yeah. She shot in the ceiling, right.
He ran out the house. He's not stupid. She shot the ceiling. He runs out the house. She winds up getting charged. As you mentioned, she had a restraining order or protective order, all that. But because it varies, and this is the same prosecutor who threw the book at Zimmerman and then has a case where this is definitely – if there's a legit reason for something to be standing your ground, this was it. Pregnant, prior victim of abuse, and didn't even kill a man. She shot the ceiling.
She shot
the ceiling. From the people I've been speaking to, legal people, the way that crazy law is written, she would have been better off if she had shot him. That lets you know how crazy the stand your ground. She'd have been better off if she had shot him.
Yes, that was when I posted this on my Facebook page, one of my very good friends that I grew up with, that was the first thing he said. He said, she's such a silly girl, she should have shot him. You know, it's unfortunate that one would even think that. But, you know, here's the thing. What is going on here with these prosecutors and these judges? I mean, given the abusers any type of airplay, any type of space to have protection under the law when it's clear that they have broken the law. I mean, yes, we all are supposed to be protected under the law, but I mean, when you have a man that is abusing a pregnant woman, she doesn't have the right to protect herself and the life of her unborn child?
Remember,
what kind of world do we
live in? He had done this before, and there were records of him being there. This is not her word against his as far as the abuse.
No, that's what I'm saying.
He was a known abuser. And the thing is, this case is not getting any media attention at all. Michael Bazin mentioned it.
I'm sorry?
Okay, Michael Bazin actually mentioned it today, but all he did was tell his people to Google Marissa's name. But that's about as most as far as media. That's the most I've heard it covered. Again, if the blogger is taking the lead on this one, but I'm curious to see if this story picks up anything, being as it's the same prosecutor.
Well, you know, here's what I would say: if you feel as passionate as I do, and when I say you, I mean the entire listening audience, there's something that we should do collectively to help this young woman, because this is clearly a misuse of justice. It's clearly a misuse of justice. This woman was being abused by this man, and she was carrying his baby, and she did not want to die, and she didn't want her baby to die. So what did she do? She shot a cap in the ceiling instead of in his ass where it should have been. And look at what has happened to her. Now she's locked up. Okay, people, what are we going to do about that? Because here we're talking about all the time the injustices of the world. But what do we do for these people that are suffering the injustices? One person can make a difference. I'd be, like you said, I'd be interested to see who really stands up for this young lady.
Right,
and I've taken down her information, and I am going to reach out to her because I feel bad for her because I know what it is to, I know what it feels like to have an injustice be done to you.
It just seems like the laws are more written, you know, to favor the perpetrator and not the victim. That's just what it seems like. Do you know that if I'm in my house at 2:00 in the morning and someone comes in and burglarizes my house and I have to jump out of my bed, grab my gun, if this burglar sees me coming with my gun, he runs back toward the window from which he came. Before he get out that window, if I shoot and kill him, do you know that I'm wrong because he was retreating? He was trying to leave the scene and I shot him, even though he broke in my house.
Well, when he's running away, we don't know what direction he's running. He could be running to get a weapon.
Right.
He could be running.
See him as retreating running and trying to leave the scene, I could be prosecuted for shooting him when he
was
trying to leave.
Yeah. I know in New Jersey, we always joke, if that happens, pull him to the middle of the room. Shoot him.
Right.
Like you said, they're trying to get out and you shoot him, it's on you. Laws are made that you said that they're made to. You would think it's more for the criminal. You don't understand it, but and that's what bugs me out about Florida. Any other state you indiscriminately shoot somebody, even if it may be justified, you're in trouble. Florida,
so
you
hear that?
Have to get off without even
don't
get arrested.
Don't plan on moving to Florida if you're a person of color. Don't move to Florida. You don't stand a chance. Okay.
But you know what? That law that I just stated, that's in almost every state. The scenario I just gave you, that's almost in every state. And my father always told me, and my father growing up, he was a cowboy. He shot at everything, okay? So he told me, anybody ever come to your door that's not welcome, don't shoot them outside. He said, shoot them at the door and pull them in.
Well, on that note, take a commercial break, and when we are going to bring Dr. Hackley on the line. And just for the guest panel and my guest caller, I've been instructed by Dr. Hackley to say that no hold should be barred just because he's on the show. So, on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 40 seconds, peeps.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn on.
When Read Life Show.
You gotta turn on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn her on. The Read Life. The Read Life. You gotta turn her on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
When Read Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn her on. The Read Life. The Read Life. You gotta turn her on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for Real Talk about Real Life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRILIFE.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
And we're back. This is the Breathe Life Radio Show. I'm your host, Bree. We're being joined tonight by George Cook, who is the president of the Hillside Chapter of the Board of Education. He's also an author and an activist. Shortly, we'll be joined by Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. And, of course, our guest panel also consists of Alex Leith, who is a prominent movie and TV show producer. Thank you for standing by, everybody. Okay. So we're talking about what it is to be black in America now. And, George, before we brought Alex on the line, I had asked you, what do you feel that being black in America really is like right now? You're in your early 40s. You're a politician, an activist, an author. How do you feel about being black in America now?
And being as I'm in my early 40s, I came in, me and my friends talk about this, like we came in at a weird time. We were born at that period where, yes, there was racism, but the overt in this, in that was kind of dying down, and it became more, you know, more subtle. They found different ways. And we came in at a time where we didn't grow up with the same overt racism my mother and father did. But yet we always heard about it. We knew about it. And we grew up where people learned different tricks to keep you down. But at the same time, there were more things open to us that our parents couldn't do. So it was a real, for us, it's a real weird time because I still have a grandfather that blames the white man for everything. If no matter what goes wrong, if he bangs his knee on a coffee table, a white man built that coffee table. I mean, he blames the white man for everything, and we're like, we're not as angry as our parents and grandparents may be, and yet we know we still have to be cautious. We have to, we have to be cautious, but at the same time, we have kids, and you want your kids to grow up thinking that it's going to be better for them than it was for you, so you find yourself catching yourself a lot when you say certain things because you don't want to. The hard part, I think, growing up now, being black in America, is you want your kids to have all the things that come with being American, but you have to constantly tell them that as great as this country is, it's still America. You're still a black person in America. So,
and isn't that such a contradiction to also
exactly.
be telling children who are very they are very influenced by what we say and how we behave in front of them. We're speaking with forked tongue when we tell them that, but that's what we have to do. I mean, I have a 15-year-old son, and I have to make him aware of his blackness every chance that I get, because the older he gets now, I'm more concerned, especially when I see things like Trayvon Martin happening. You know, I'm a mother that has one child and I can't imagine what Trayvon's mother is feeling right now. And I wouldn't want to know. But I have deepest sympathy for her. And we all should think about that, you know.
Yes. I know I was driving my daughter down the highway the other day, and she was hungry. It was early in the morning. She sees Denny's. Oh, Daddy, we're going to stop there. I said, number one, we're not stopping there. And she wanted to know why. And I didn't know. I'm like, should I go through this whole story with her? Or, you know, I'm conflicted at that moment. And I didn't want to sit there and tell her it's probably not a good idea for black people to go to Denny's. But I didn't want to run into those. I don't know about other states, but I know in New Jersey, they're very prejudiced. Everybody that walks in after you will get seated or whatever. So in New Jersey, we don't go to Denny's. Black people, we don't go to Denny's.
Right.
And you know, she's looking at me like, why can't we go to Denny's? And it's like, okay, this is the United States. You can go anywhere you want to. You want your kids to know that they can go anywhere they want to. They can be anything they want to be. But in the back of your mind, you know that there are things that can prevent that from happening. But you want your child to have hope. You want your child to know that they can be successful. But it's just and I don't think white Americans understand this. Because they don't have to tell their kids stuff like that. That's why I think that's another part of the racial divide in this country is there's right now there is no post-racial. There's two different Americas. Things are getting better, but we have a very, very long way to go. And I still have my daughter still asks me, why can't we go to Denny's? I don't know what, I don't want to tell her you're black, you can't go to Denny's.
Right.
I choose not to go there because I don't like the way they treat African Americans. But should I put that on my daughter? Should she be able to make her own decision on that matter? So sometimes,
well,
it's confusing.
I think if you explain it to her, she'll make up her own mind and she'll make the right choice.
Yeah.
Make the right choice, I think.
Yeah, well, George, and let me say this, George.
Before you say something, though, Alex, Dr. Hackley has been waiting patiently, so I want to bring him on the line and bring him into this conversation.
Okay.
Dr. Hackley, peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings, Bree. I am glad to be here. Peace and blessings, George, and Alex, is good to
be on the line with
you tonight. When I called in, somebody was talking about shooting, and I was saying, this is going to be fun tonight. This is going to be a good conversation.
And then to let you know, Dr. Hackley, I've already informed my panelists that, you know, it's about being raw tonight, so we don't have to, you know, we don't have to have our church outfits on tonight.
That's right.
We can let it go.
This is the after church show. This is the after church show tonight. So you may even hear Dr. Hackley say some things. You say, "Wow, Dr. Hackley, don't hold your breath tonight. So we're gonna talk tonight." But I do want to say.
Well,
as
no.
Yes.
Well, just
we're gonna have
the panel discussion for about 15 more minutes, and then we'll be taking calls in, and you'll have about 30 seconds to pose a question, and then to a panelist. And then that's how we're going to move the show along after 10 o'clock. So in order to participate in the discussion, please give us a call at 424-220-1862. Okay, Dr. Hackley. So before you start, I think Alex wanted to make a comment, and then I want you to infuse some of your thoughts and tell us how you felt about last week's show. But Brother Alex, please finish your thought.
Yeah, real quick, I want to address George's comment with his daughter and Denny's. And apparently Denny's haven't learned the lesson. Several years ago, Denny's was the victim of a class action suit by several blacks for that very same behavior that you described, that telling your daughter why you guys can't go to Wendy's. And as a result of this class action suit, a lot of blacks now own Denny's restaurant. Okay, because of this class action suit, which surprised me because a lot of blacks own Denny's now. But however, according to you, they're still doing some of the same practices. And very quickly, as you said before, we don't harbor as much, bitterness and anger as our parents did. But that's because we were born pretty much in our early 40s now, in mid 40s, at the tail end of the civil rights movement. So all the tricks at that point, guys like Malcolm and Martin and Mega Evers, they exposed all the tricks. So we came in at the tail end, and we kind of knew what the tricks were. What we started living through was they started reinstituting new tricks of racism, which we call institutional racism. And we had to figure out now what the new tricks were. So we had to live through that whole era. You know, me and Bree from Brooklyn, we worked in Wall Street and corporate America, and we were victims of that kind of institutionalized kind of racism that our parents hadn't dealt with, but it's kind of that new age thing, moving up through the 80s and 90s and so forth. So just wanted to address those things real quick before Dr. Hackley breaks in.
I totally agree, Alex. In fact, I have a great friend that is the owner of Denny's here in Washington, D.C., on the northeast side of town. And they're probably, in fact, there are about three of them that are close to me in the vicinity of where I live. And so, in those Denny's, when you walk into, it's all African American music. They play gospel on Sundays and play the oldies and things throughout the course of the week. They're open 24 hours. The majority of the staff is African American, and then they also, because of the mixture and because of gentrification that is going on in Washington D.C., there is another challenge that's going on. However, he chooses to hire people and also train them in management there. There are many times that I go to this particular Denny's where he's doing management level training on beginning employees, but it's giving them the heads up towards leadership and things of that nature. So that class action suit opened up a door for those of us who have the capability and the mindset and the tenacity to go after changing the definition of what these companies mean to us. It gives us an open door to do that. One thing that I discuss in my book, and I really want to just read something from it. But one thing that I want to discuss is that when there's two dimensions of where we are. Maya Angelou says this. She says, bitterness is like cancer. It eats upon the host. But anger, it's like fire, and it burns it all clean. There is an element of activity that's in anger that moves us to action, that causes us to protest a situation like Trayvon Martin, that causes us to stand up and make sure that what we say we want, we get. So anger has a very vital ministry in what we do as a community. And so we cannot set aside anger. Our children have to know the whole truth. We have to tell them the whole truth because it is ugly. Part of it is very ugly. Part of it is becoming pretty. It's becoming a beautiful thing to be able to be black and black love and this kind of thing, the things that we are celebrating about ourselves. But there is something that I talk about in my book that is very clear, that is, and that is post-traumatic slave disorder or syndrome. And the syndrome is a group of disorders. And I talk about that. Dr. Joy DeGrand Leary talks about that in her book. She introduced the concept some years ago. I had come up with a similar concept, but understood that I was saying the same thing that she was saying. So I do give her credence to introducing this concept. We are dealing with a psychology that has been invested into us for the benefit of economic power over us as a people. As long as we are kept fighting amongst ourselves, hating ourselves, doubting ourselves, scared to go to certain restaurants. There's one thing. Some people are scared to go to the restaurant. Other people are mad, then they don't go to the restaurant. Then there's a third group of people that are mad and they're scared, but they have this kind of apathy that says, I care, but I don't care, so I'm going to go and I'm going to own this restaurant. I don't care what happens to me, if I lose my life, if I have to die for this particular cause, I am going to cut the head off of this beast. And that is what we have to develop in this generation that is rising. Because if they become programmed by this, it came to me in a dream last night that there is so much television and so much music that is socially programming our children, our African-American children. Our children are being programmed so heavily that they spend nine hours a day watching TV. They may spend 2 or 3 hours listening to us. Who do you think is directing their actual inner faculties, their sense of history, their sense of self-definition, things of that nature? We have to take a very strong and a very aggressive stand in investing in the mindset, not just putting thoughts, but investing in the mindset of our children. Because when we come to a position of power in their lives, we have the responsibility of directing or guiding them the proper way. And so what happens now is that daughter of yours, sir, she needs to know that, yes, there's been issues in Denny's, but, baby, I need you to own it because I need to be able to go to that one and any other one. And you can buy a couple of them if you want to, because we would not mind having that kind of money in the family name. We have to get to a place in our community action or our activism, where our activism translates into economic power, prowess, not only locally and not only in the country, but globally. I have a meeting coming in the next couple of weeks with the ambassador of the Republic of Benin and some of those people here on the embassy roll, some of the other embassies, and the program that we're working on and I'm really trying to spearhead is the Bridge to Africa program, and one thing that is the one thing that's key to the Bridge to Africa program is African Americans spending time in the embassy and Africans that are born in Africa, African Americans that are born in Africa, spending time in the embassy together, exchanging things like French, things like the multilingual dimensions of operations outside the country, and, of course, economic opportunities to expand in other countries and where there's actual need for our prowess, our innovation, things that we take for granted here are needed in other places, and things that they take for granted there are also needed here, a sense of family, sense of structure, sense of order. And so what happens is there's a bridge that's being rebuilt. But one thing I really do want to say is that there is, where are we as Black Americans? It is on page 347 of my book, The Letter, which you can get at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, is the letter Hackley. If you put that in Google, you'll get it. But it says, by her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from a psychologically dependent state to a frozen independent state. I'm going to read the verse before.
You just define the state of African American women in this country right now, because many of us are disenfranchised and have been disrupted, disrespected, and a whole lot of disses. and that's exactly. And that's exactly what the state of African American women, a lot of us in America, are right now.
Yes, absolutely. And
I want to, if you could, Dr. Hackley, I just want to ask our panelists, George, what is your feeling about what Dr. Hackley said about his field? Because I was going to actually. When I had an opportunity to ask you, you know, do you feel that telling your daughter the real deal about Denny's and why perhaps it would be wise not to, or what your choice for not going to Denny's would be? What do you think about what Dr. Hackley has said?
I mean, actually, you gave me another perspective as far as, you know what, own it. I mean, that was something I never really thought of. If you don't like the way that Denise is run, why don't you get your money together and buy it? That's something different, but it just feels awkward. Your kid grows up, you're telling them all their lives, you can do anything you want, you can be anything you can be, but when you go there, they're still going to treat you like you're Black. Because my daughter, you know, she grew up in a different area where, I hate the term post-racial, but until our kids learn the foolishness from the parents, the kids tend to get along. So they're all together in school, you know, they don't, and it feels like we're bringing racism to them before they, I'm sure at some point she'll experience it, but it feels like we're bringing it to them, but, okay, this is what's going to happen to you, this is how they're going to treat you, and it's like, but you raise your kid, you know, to, yes, America, you can do whatever, so sometimes it does seem like you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. Now, one question I have for the doctor, and I love everything he said, but he talked about how we were programmed, how we were treated, Willie Lynch. What's funny is you can talk to a thug, a drug dealer on the corner, and they can say the same thing you said, although not as eloquently. So that means a lot of people know it. Why is it we know what's going on and it still happens? I've heard people from every spectrum of life say exactly what you said in different ways, but then they go out and do the same behaviors or the same things happen again that lead to this crabs in the barrel mentality. I mean, you're the doctor. I'm just wondering how that happens.
Well, I really love that question, because it provides – this is where I had the same question, because I grew up around people who knew – what the problem was, but there has to be, and I say that my answer to the question is very straight. There has to be solution-oriented stimuli, one, and energy, two, and three, activity. There has to be stimuli that is solution-based. And what do I mean by solution-based? I don't mean we ignore the truth of what has happened or what we have experienced. I mean that we face it. We face it like we look in the mirror. We face it. And then we build an energy that is specific to that issue One thing about European when you're in Europe and I forget the part, but there's a when the prime minister or they're having a cabinet discussion and the left doesn't agree with something, they go up in this whole theatrical voicing of nays, and this whole energy evolves in the room against the point until there's agreement on the left and the right side of the point.
What about Parliament?
Say that again?
Are you speaking
Parliament? Yes, the Parliament. Yeah, forgive me. And I was going to say the same thing goes on in the Congress. You'll see in different dimensions, especially while the President is giving State of the Union address. But one thing I really realized is that there needs to be stimuli first, and then second in energy, and then third in activity. And what do I mean by activity? I mean, we have to absolutely, this is the first year. I mean, this is 2012 is the year that he says that the cancellation of this curse is possible if we change our phenomena. And I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again. Phenomena is the key. We can't do it one time. We can't do it two times. We can't even do it just 10 times. It has to be a hurricane of solution-oriented activity. Yes, we have been acting like crabs in the barrel, but there's not been enough wind to send those crabs out to sea where they have a lot of room, so they ain't got to be in the barrel no more. They can eat what they want to. There is another dimension. I don't care what we call ourselves. I don't care what we have, the problems that we have with ourselves. They were given to us. They were invested into our minds. And when I say invested, I mean that fear and self-destructive patterns were invested so that the person that is controlling us could get the best out of us. We hate the Denny's, but yet if that's the only place that we can stop because of convenience, we're going to stop there and spend our money there instead of saying we're going to save the money we're making and we're going to buy this Denny's, and we're going to internally decide that we're going to change our position. Yes, it's a lot of work. Yes, it's easier said than done. Yes, people are going to have a problem with you. Yes, you're going to encounter challenges climbing up that ladder. Yes, you're going to encounter, it's not the racism that the children are experiencing in the classroom. We all got along together in the classroom ourselves until we figured out what it was to go try for a loan. And the papers and the demographics and the statistics say, don't give this man a loan. This stuff is older than what we are. This stuff is older than what our children are. We're dealing with something that has been.
Dr. Hackney, I have to stop you right there because that's exactly what my brother Alex and I have been talking about. And Alex, feel free to jump in anytime. You know, we talk about investing. We talk about demographics and statistics. And George, Brother George and I, we were talking about this afternoon when we were having our one-on-one conversation. And the problem is that we are not, as a people, disciplined enough to say that we are going to produce products and we're going to manufacture products and we're going to sell them amongst, we can sell them globally, but we're only going to buy and sell between each other. We're only going to spend our resources within our group. The Chinese do it. The East Indians do it. The American Jews, the Hasidic Jews, the Russian Jews do it. Everyone else does it except for us.
Absolutely. 100% right.
Black banks, there's a list of 22 black banks that Alex shared with me, that he shared with a list of people via email, and I've shared with people. How disciplined do you think we are to take that list and say, you know what, and I'm not making the assumption, listeners, that everybody's working, because we know that there's double-digit unemployment out there. But for those who are working and who could afford to open up a savings account with a black bank, Who's how many of us is disciplined to do that?
Well,
this is inherently the problem. This is systemic with what Dr. Hackley is talking about with how we view ourselves. We can't even place value. We don't place enough value in ourselves. We don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I had $500 that I could invest in, if I had a choice between opening an account with Bank of America or let's see what this list says. The Mechanic Farmers Bank in Durham, North Carolina. I would give them my $500 before I gave Bank of America my $500, because guess what? If I wanted to get let's say if I wanted to do something to build up my credit and get a secured credit card, I'm sure they would be inclined to give it to me faster than Bank of America.
Yeah.
And you have to hold black people and black companies and institutions, you have to make them accountable. I'm black and I'm investing my money in you, and this is what I want in return. Because that's what every other ethnicity does. They make their power sources accountable. That's what George was talking about earlier with voting.
Mm-hmm.
You want change? You want to insist that there be change in your district, in your community? You go directly, you take a group and you go directly to your councilman or your alderman or your assemblyman or your congressman. You say, look, I can guarantee you these 1,000 votes, but you ain't going to get them unless you do X, Y, and Z in the community. And if you don't get this done before election time comes, we guarantee you, you're not getting reelected. That's how you have to do it.
Yeah. And I want to say this, Bree, and I know that the other panelists probably have a comment on it. We have, again, entered into a different time. We are not where we used to be. This generation is trying to find its definition, its calling, its purpose. And we have to piggyback. We don't start where our forefathers started. We start where they left off. We pick up where they left off. When right before Malcolm was assassinated, they were working on a curriculum for African American studies to be introduced to the general public and the school system. Not many people knew that.
I read before. Yeah.
And what happens is. Of course, with the desegregation, of course, we had our own businesses. We had our own street. We had our own places where we brought and sold because we couldn't buy anywhere else. But with desegregation, there was a loss and almost a socialization that is systemic of what we're experiencing now, which is we spend our dollars with every other community other than our own. Now, what has to happen? There has to be a repolarization. What do I mean by repolarization? We have to, first of all, come together. We have a group here in Washington called the Collective Banking Group. It's a group of African-American businesses, preachers, churches, and owners, and all this other kind of stuff, where we pool our money together, and we not only go after banks or banking resources or founded the bank as far as the credit union is concerned, but also the going after government contracts, making each other know what's available, and approaching the situation together. And one thing that's very vital, ground level, grassroots level work in the local community and connecting to people that are doing the work that's necessary to manifest the words that we are talking about, because, again, we have talked a long time. We have known what the issue is for a long time, but the work that's involved with manifesting the whole challenge, manifesting solution to the whole challenge is again something that we have to have a drive to. I mean, I get up very early in the morning. Some days my days are 20-hour days, and I could be doing anything from helping somebody across the street to helping somebody wash their clothes, to helping somebody organize a marketing campaign for their business, or launching something, or helping somebody do it. But the key to it all is I know that when I wake up in the morning, it's not just about selling books. It's not just about making music. It's not just about pastoring or preaching. It's not just about being in that pulpit. It's about being on that ground level, walking around that corner and saying, okay, we want this building. We want this building, and we want to do it together. We had a meeting yesterday of probably about four or five businesses that have come together, and we're saying, okay, we need to go into the building together because we cannot do it. We cannot do it where one is at. Has the whole detriment of the situation on them, but we're going to make sure that we go into the project together. Like you, Bree, we have a panel of people. We're not looking for one leader. We're looking for the entire discussion to come together, and all of the minds to come together, and that's how we have to move. We have to move corporate, because a corporation is simply a group of bodies, and this is the other thing. Corporation, corpse. The root word is corpse. It means body. And so until, the place where we've lost is we've lost the reality or the definition of who we are as a body of people. We are one man and many of many. We are one man and woman of many in this country. And until we begin to see ourselves as many bodies, yet one body, we will lose. My pastor used to always tell me before he died, he said, Hackley, there's only one man in the earth, and that's Adam. And I said, wow. And I said, you know, at first I really didn't understand what he was trying to tell me, but he was saying there are different dimensions to that man and to humanity. And, of course, there is a dimension that is specified to the culture and the rearing, but you have to understand your connection to humanity, but also your distinction in humanity. And so he began to teach from that dimension, and that perspective began to help me of how to deal as a man and how to cross the bridge. But we have to. We must do what you're doing, Bree, and come together and revive the image.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your acknowledgement and my efforts, because I'll tell you, before we take, I'm going to take a caller, and then we're going to go to Alex, because I know that Alex, in some discussions that Alex and I have had over the last couple of days, there are a couple of questions that he wanted to throw out there for both the panelists. But okay. I have been, you know, for lack of a better term, I've been catching hell about this topic. Mm-hmm. I've been catching hell about this topic from my friends and family, more specifically, because, you know, people are concerned about my safety and my well-being. They feel that all type of crazies are going to come out of the woodwork after me, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've been dealing with racism my whole life, you know, walking around with a name and being Egyptian post 9/11 is not an easy thing. I've been a person of color my entire life, living in Crown Heights, having teachers who were Jewish. One who slammed my head up against the wall when I was in second grade. So because I was Egyptian, because I am Egyptian, and I have this very hard last name. So yeah. I have been dealing with racism and being, you know, and having to walk softly and to be strategic, working in corporate America my entire life. But here's what I say to all of those who are concerned about me or would like for me to change the topic and to go back to topics that we're only talking about relationships and, you know, it being a platform to merely vent about, you know, the dissatisfactions that men and women have between one another. Let me just tell you this, two things. One, I love you all for being concerned about me and my safety, but you must know one thing. I've always been a fearless person. I will continue to be fearless because I feel a need to talk about the things that are ailing my people. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And especially being a woman that has been and still is to a degree disenfranchised all the things that Dr. Hackley was talking about earlier. It's very important for us to hear this.
Yeah.
We have to have a forum for people at the grassroots level to hear this and to come up with solutions and to put some things in action, like George and I were talking about earlier today. Secondly, and most importantly, the reason for having these discussions is so that we can get to the core problems of why men and women don't get along, why men and women have a failure in communicating with one another. I have been saying since the Bree Life Show has started back in January that men and women don't communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a core problem. There's a root problem to why we don't communicate well, and it even supersedes something that I realized as a result of talking with one of our other guest callers, Mark from Houston, Texas, that you must have a willingness to communicate. It's not just about the fact that we don't communicate well with one another. You must have a willingness. But guess what? Now, when we get to the nucleus of that problem,
mm-hmm.
it goes
mm-hmm.
back to self-hatred. And to it goes back to the fact that we, as individuals, are broken.
Yes.
And we have to work on that so that we can become better husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends and mothers and daughters and sons and fathers to one another. If we do not fix the core problem, all the outer layers won't matter. And the willingness to communicate won't matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Communication will not matter. So bearing all that in mind, we're going to take our first caller of the evening, and that person is calling from 504-535. The caller, 504-535, we're bringing you on the line. Good evening, caller. Thank you so much for calling into the show. You know we're talking about what it means to be black in America now. Do you have a question or concern for any of the panelists this evening? Okay. I think that caller just merely wants to listen. So we're going to bring... So, and that's okay. I love the listeners. Bree Life Radio, we love the listeners. So our next caller we're going to bring on is calling from area code 718-763. The caller from 718-763, we're going to bring you on the line. Peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show. We're talking about what it means to be black in America today. Who may I ask is calling? Okay, I believe we have a bunch of listeners on the line today. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Alex, I know you've been waiting patiently and biting, chomping at the bit to get some of your questions out, so feel free to jump in.
Well, it's not so much questions. It's, you know, Dr. Happy spoke before about anger, and, you know, anger, misguided anger can be very detrimental, but channeled anger can be very powerful. Even the Bible says, you know, be angry, but sin not. God himself knows we get angry. But if we use that anger properly, we could do some tremendous things. You know, anger don't mean running into a 7-Eleven and getting a few dollars and a couple of bottles of beer. That's ignorance. And that's what we tend to do when we get angry. We want to break windows and do all kind of other stupid stuff that gets us nowhere. But if we kind of channel that anger into our economic base, I mean, you have over $800 billion a year that leaves the black community and goes into other communities. Every state you go into, every city has a little Italy. They have a Chinatown. They have a Germantown. They have the Hasidic community. Every place has that, but we don't have a little Africa. We don't have a place to go and spend our money and build our economic base and use our black banks and build our own self-worth and community up. And then
even Harlem, the blackest place in New York, isn't even owned solely by African Americans.
Right. We still have to go to other places begging, you know, for business. I mean, I'm in the film and television industry, okay? And it's very tough in this industry to get distribution. Now, you would think with all the wealthy blacks we have in show business and powerful positions, why do we still have to go to white companies and beg for distribution? That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. There's too many of us out there with money that can produce and distribute our own product without having to go to our white counterparts and beg for distribution. And the fact that they know we have to do that, they constantly deny us. This is why they constantly say, you know, the world don't want to see all black cast. The world don't want to see all black this, all black that. That's a crock of crap. That's a bunch of crap that they sell us, and we believe it. Okay? We have just as much viability globally in film and television as any other ethnic group. How are you going to say that blacks can't sell overseas and rap is the biggest thing overseas? And rap was created by black people.
Mm-hmm.
You got Chinese people overseas in China rapping. You don't know what the hell they saying, but they rapping.
Yep.
Okay? So they sell us this nonsense, and we continue to buy into it. But I'm going to say this. We have to unlearn some stuff. You know, when I think about elementary school, when I think about going through my history class, math is math, English is English. But when it comes to history, most of that stuff that they taught us in school for my history book is a lie. They taught us that Lincoln freed the slaves because he felt slavery was wrong and he loved black people. That's a lie. George Washington crossed the Delaware standing up on a rowboat in choppy, icy waters, but he stared there in defiance. That's a lie. I mean, they just keep teaching you these lies, and they continue to perpetuate them over and over again. And it's not until we graduate school and do our own research and study until we find out a lot of this stuff is a lie. And you have these kids nowadays with technology and Twitter and Facebooking. They just had a movie out a couple of weeks ago called The Hunger Games. Okay, now I don't follow this book. It's a very popular book, apparently, and they made a movie out of it. Now, one of the stars of it is a young black girl who was in the book, and she was killed in the film, apparently. I haven't seen the film, but she was killed in the film, apparently.
Thanks for telling us the ending.
Yeah, well, yay, I got to get this out because the point is that a lot of the young white viewers on Twitter, the very young group, was writing in, calling her all kind of N-word bitches. They didn't feel as bad as they did when they read the book, now knowing she's an N-word bitch. They don't feel as bad that she died now. This was all over Twitter. And we're still being fed that stuff right now today. It's continuing to be perpetuated. There's a lot of stuff we have to unlearn. We got a lot of healing to do. There are groups that were given reparations, and we weren't. The Jews were given reparations by the Germans and by America. The Indians were given reparations, but no one wants to give blacks reparations for the work that we've done, the sacrifices we made. Everybody that's in America right now, other than the Indians, the Native American, stepped on the backs of black people to come into this country and succeed, and we're still at the bottom of the barrel. There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, I want to say this. I want to say that we're wrestling with two things, and I want to offer a solution. We're wrestling with there's a psychology word called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is when you have the feeling of two conflicting ideas in you at the same time, that you know that both ideas have a sense of validity to it, but they are opposing ideas. And what the training of Lynch did, he says there's a whole section. Here we go. There's a whole section that I commit in this book to the breaking process of the African woman. And during the breaking process of the African woman, Lynch says that the woman is the most important factor for economics, the woman and the child. If you can focus on the woman and the child, you will create an economy. And I'm going to say this on this line tonight. This is going to be a serious statement. What if I said, Dr. Hackley said, I want every black woman, every black mother, every black mother and every child under the age of 21, every child under the age of 18, every child under the age of 16, I want to take all of you out of the corporations that you're working for, watch this, with white names, or you're working for corporations that have been founded outside of your own culture, and I want to take all of you who are working for those companies, and I want you to commit to, watch this, I want you to find somebody with a vision, either somebody with each other, especially a man, a brilliant man who you know is broke down and can't get past himself. Take your power. Now, this is crazy right here. This is radical forgiveness. This is radical forgiveness. I'm going to say that again. This is radical forgiveness, and this is radical action. I want you to take your power, everything that you've learned, all your administrative skills, all your project management skills, all of your accounting skills, all of your ability, your taxation, all of your child development skills. I want you to take all of those skills, and I want you to put it on somebody's name of your culture and your race. And what I want you to do is I don't want you to stop working on that name until that name becomes just as meaningful in this country as Marriott, or that name becomes just as meaningful in this country as Hilton. It's just a last name. There's no magic to it. There's no magic to it. The magic is that somebody's got you valuing something outside of yourself more than you value yourself. And if I could somehow, now this is the key. I talk about all this in the book. I talk about the three different levels of subjugation. There is subjugation, there is alienation, there is gentrification that's going on. The people who are being subjugated, they're being harvested for their ideas. The people who are alienated are working, and they're being paid the most money not to have ideas anymore, but just to administrate the ideas that have been stolen from them. The people who are being gentrified are those with the most powerful ideas that we try to keep them at the bottom of the barrel by keeping them on liquor. Somebody in the black community does get paid. There are black people that do get paid to be on TV. There are black people that do get paid to have movies about them. They are the ones that are willing to sell out the image of strength. They are the ones that are willing, and I'm sorry if I'm stepping on some toes. They are the ones that are willing to exploit the degradation of the people. Now, what has to happen? There has to be. Now, we cannot just demonize those people because they say, I got to make my money, I got to get that paper, I got to survive the best way I can. Okay, we did that for a minute. But we've got to now take the paper that we've gotten, take the influence that we've gotten, and say, I'm going to take this paper, I'm going to take this influence, and I'm going to reshift the position. I am going to reshift the position. What's reshifting the position? The position is that the male is in his place, the female is in their place, that they work toward. How many songs, Bree, do we listen to on a regular basis that feed the dysfunction? How many shows, drama, TV shows do we watch and send up the ratings that feed our dysfunction? It wasn't just the women that's dis. It's the whole
wives. The real housewives of these different cities and states. Ridiculous.
Are they really real? That's the real question. Are they our housewives? Or are they the image of the wife that they want us to have? Because I'm going to tell you something. If we keep looking dumb on TV, we'll keep our daughters aspiring to that dumbness. We'll keep our babies wanting to be something like they see that's glorified in front of them, and they will not realize the glory that is within them. We have
wait. But Dr. Hackley, I need us to go to church for a minute. Say that again, brother. Say that one more time about the dumbness, please. And I hope that the antennas have gone up in the air. Talk about the dumbness.
If we keep our daughters and our sons, for that matter, aspiring to the dumbness that they see on TV, they're going to grow up to reproduce that same stupidity, but they're going to do it 10 times worse because what's on TV is made up. They got camera people. They got all that kind of stuff. But the fallout from that mess at home is a lot worse than what goes on the television. That's one. Number two, if we got really to doing what we're supposed to do, they will not glorify what they see on TV more so than what's been put in them. They are innately great. They are innately phenomenal. I say every morning, good morning, phenomenal people. Who am I talking to? I'm talking to everybody that understands. I say it on my Facebook. I say it on my Twitter. Good morning, phenomenal people. I'm talking to everybody that understands that what is within them is greater than what's around them, that the world that they can create is greater than the world that they continue to submit themselves to every day. You don't have to take it. You don't have to do it. Yes, it's going to cost you something. Yes, the system is going to come after you because it's not designed in your favor. However, there is another system. What is the other system? And I got to give this brief. The other system is this. Father comes from the Greek word pater. It means pattern giver. Mother comes from the word matter or matriarch. She is the maturer of the pattern. Son comes from the word bane. Bane is the builder of the pattern. Daughter comes from the word bath. The daughter is the accentuator or the glory of the pattern. So you got a father who is the pattern. You got the mother who is the maturer of the pattern. You got a son who is the builder of the pattern. And you got a daughter who glorifies the pattern. What do we want to do? What do we want to take away from this community? We want to take away their pattern. We want to take away the man. We want to take away the father. If we take away the pattern, we're going to have, this is what we're going to have. We're going to have a woman that's going to mature somebody else's pattern. We're going to have a son that's going to build somebody else's pattern. We're going to have a daughter that's going to glorify somebody else's pattern. What has to happen? There has to be a phenomenon that is so radical, that is so crazy, that is so off the wall, that says we will not submit to this foolishness. Not publicly. We're not talking about we're going to go down to the White House and boycott who's in the office. No, no. I need us to go to our own mind and boycott what we put in our mind. We have to boycott our own self. We have to boycott our own.
If I may at this time. I have to interject there and also recognize that what you were saying with regards to the building that must go on, the changing of how we do things. This is what I talk about all the time, and George or Alex, please jump in at any time you want to. We cannot continue to do things as we have.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, as Dr. Hackley has clearly stated, we have to start to do some radical things. We have to think radically, and we have to put some radical actions. When I say radical, I'm not like Dr. Hackley said, I'm not talking about boycotting, I'm not talking about hurting people, but, you know, even in the relationships that we have or the ones that we're starting, if you start something the same way you started something that's failed, listen to me because I'm trying to go to church too, okay? You start something the same way that you started something in the past that failed. What do you think the end result is going to be? So don't you think, and I tell people this all the time, what's wrong with doing things that are outside of the norm? Because you did it this way several times before, and you weren't successful. So why not try something new? So let's talk about the new things that we can start. But before we do, I want to bring on someone very special to me. It is Turtle, our beloved Gail from Minnesota.
Well, hello, everyone.
Turtle. Hi.
Gail. I've been listening and driving. My phone kind of cut out, so I've been hearing most of it, though.
Okay, that's good. Gail, again, we're joined this week by Dr. Hackley, and we have another special guest panelist by the name of George Cook. He's
okay.
from Hillside, New Jersey. He is the area's president for the Board of Education. He's an activist and an author. And, of course, you know our beloved brother Alex is on the line.
Okay.
This is Gail.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Gail.
Hey, Gail.
Hey, hello.
Hi.
So, yeah. Gail, you've been listening to us for off and on for a little while because I've seen
mm-hmm.
you pop in and out of the queue.
My phone kept going off.
That's okay.
Well, I like what's being said, as usual. You know, anything about our culture is educating because, like, it's not talked about enough. And that seems to be the missing link. You know, it's not talked about enough. The older people, they don't want to talk about it, you know, because they don't want to remember it. So to get out here, being on the air, just talking about this, it's a good thing, you know, and hopefully we can get some young listeners, you know, to tune in on these kind of nights and really get educated, because that's what's missing. When you've been stripped away from everything, and you're bubbling through life. We can't make a connection because our culture has been so torn apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, to really unite and do, like, you know, I heard the part when he started saying that all the women quit their job and get behind somebody and put in that, you know, that's great. It's crazy, but it's great, you know. But how do you get that mindset?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
If you just get that mindset, because that is what's missing. And they knocked out, they gave us jobs, and they don't want to give them to our brothers because if you kill the head, then you kill the family. So that's why they keep the black man down, because, you know, they don't want you living next door to them with the same kind of, you know, materialistic things that they had. So I like the idea. It's just that we can get it out to the masses.
Well,
and then earlier you said about the young lady that was got sent to jail for something, you said, for shooting in the air. She didn't kill the guy, right?
No, she didn't kill him. She shot him.
She didn't kill him, no.
Yeah, it would be nice for, since we have this connection, all of us, if we just sent a letter in her favor, in her honor, you know, to her lawyer, or just to show that there are people that's listening to this and, you know, do the right thing. Because probably
and I believe that
that's
what we should do, really. George and I, we were talking earlier, and George, feel free to jump in anytime you want to. I was saying to him, especially since he's a politician and he's an activist, I was talking to the fact that, you know, God bless them, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, those cats, they're not going to be alive forever.
Correct.
And sadly enough, what is going to be? Who's going to pick up the torch and lead this new generation of children into the next 25, 50 years? There should be some action plans put in place for the new leadership, the new civil rights struggle, because it is very apparent if people are not paying attention, they need to wake the hell up. We are not
exactly
in a post-racial America. We still living in the racist America we've been living in for the longest time. We're just living in this America now with different liberties, or if that's what you want to call them, or civil liberties, or in technology. That's the only thing that is different about today opposed to 40 years ago.
Well,
we have a few more liberties, and we're living within technology. But George, speak to me about what you think about what we should be doing on the grassroots level, like I spoke to the point earlier, and Dr. Hackley also touched on it. What should we do on the ground roots level to prepare the younger generation of youth to take up the lamppost of leadership?
To be honest with you, I think the grassroots level is actually where we excel. We can get people together on the grassroots level. I think it's when we try to take it to that next level where we start to run into the issues, because you have so many different groups or organizations, and everybody wants to be a chief. Nobody wants to be an Indian. I've seen it myself. I won't give names, but I've been at demonstrations or events where you'll see somebody's marching on Tuesday and somebody's marching on Wednesday. There's an event here, an event there, and you always wonder, why can't we have one event? Why wasn't everybody together working in unity? So I think at the grassroots level, people pretty much work together because they're angry, they're mad about something, they'll work to come back that one issue. Whatever it is that has them upset, people are pretty good. It's when you try to take it to that next level and you want to form some type of organization, form something to build on, form like a political pact. When you want to do something that's going to be lasting is when you run into the trouble.
Yeah.
Okay, who's going to be in charge of this? And I heard something once, somebody told this to me about Barack Obama as it pertains to, say, some of the civil rights leaders, that some of them were kind of angry that he was the one that made it. And the guy said that, he said, Barack Obama is the spaceship, but he couldn't have got the space without the rocket. So those civil rights leaders were the rocket, and what we need to realize as a people is sometimes you'll be the rocket and sometimes you'll be the spaceship. It'll be different every time, but I think that biggest problem is once we go past the grassroots level, there's everybody wants to be in charge, or there's a lot of infighting that the general public may not hear about, even in the black community, among civil rights organizations, between young, between old, between those groups that may be more radical, those groups that may be more moderate, those groups that are more militant. There's a lot of stuff that goes on that I think a lot of people would be surprised if they saw or knew about.
Well, can I interject here for a second?
Yes, please.
And Brother George makes a good point, and I want to piggyback on something Dr. Happy was saying, because we really have to do this as a group, as George was just saying, and he said it very eloquently. We have to do it as a group. If you want to find leadership, look in the mirror. It starts with you. And then your leadership will permeate throughout your community or your immediate circle. And it's like a virus. Great leadership just spreads. We don't have to look to one person to lead us. No other ethnic group does that, okay, but black people. But I want to say this, too, amongst building wealth. We only have a short time left on this show, and I'm going to talk about a lot of solutions in the next show. But what I do want to say is we've done this before. We've built great black wealth in the early 19th century. And I said this before, in a place called Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was the blueprint, okay? Of course, white folks got jealous because there were so many affluent blacks. We owned our own banks, cleaners, laundromats. We owned mansions. We had everything. You can look Black Wall Street up on YouTube. And it's a 12-part series, okay? We've done this before, okay? White folks got angry, got the military, law enforcement involved. They came in and burnt down the whole town. Burned it down to the ground. Murdered, killed all of us, burned it down. Okay? But they got us going overseas looking for terrorists. We got terrorists right here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other thing. But the reason why I talk about the problems is because we have to deal with the problems and then figure out the solutions. Because if we don't know what the problems were, we'll fall for them again. And Dr. Hackley has the book about the Willie Lynch syndrome and so forth. On top of the Willie Lynch syndrome, there was also the meritorious manumission. I'm not sure if he has that in his book, but that was a law written in 1710 that also divided us tremendously. And the meritorious manumission stated in 1710, any black person who ratted out a slave revolt, who saved the master's life, who saved the master's property or invented something that the master could profit off of, he will be rewarded. So you have one black person who knows of a slave revolt with 500 people trying to escape, and because he's thinking he's going to be rewarded, he squeals on it. We're still dealing with that today. Those type of sickness and illnesses we're dealing with today. And we have to get to the root cause of that We have to heal that, unlearn most of that or all of that, and then get into the solution base, how we got to deal and build our economic base up from that, and how we going to do it as a group. Like I said before, every place has their Chinatowns, their little Italys, their German towns, their city community. Nobody has a little Africa or a little black town where we could put our own wealth, own resources into it, because if we did that, we'd be afraid that everybody's going to come after us, calling us racist and this and that, okay? We can't be afraid of that. Dr. Heffy made a statement, as per my statement, where we have so many wealthy blacks right now who need to take all that wealth, rechannel it back down into their communities, but they won't do it because of fear. They are afraid that if word get out that they're channeling that money to build up the black community, they're going to be stripped of it and right up here with the rest of the poor folk looking crazy. It's that fear. You're not going to find many Muhammad Ali's walking around today who will risk everything, which is what he did for the good of his people, knowing what the bigger picture was. Muhammad Ali, the greatest fighter of all time, knew the bigger picture wasn't his belt.
Right.
It was the empowerment of his people.
Absolutely.
And he would risk it all. And he is loved, beloved to this day for that. Okay? So we don't have those kind of guys running. With all this wealth we have, we don't have no Muhammad Ali's today. And we need some more of those.
I want to say something. Can I just say something about Little Africa? This point was brought up in Atlanta. I met the Archbishop John Lewis of the African Orthodox Church. He was he's a fourth generation Garveyite. He is one who saw and developed the plans for Little Africa in Atlanta, and in fact the land has been purchased for this kind of project to go on in Atlanta and then some other places. And what we've been talking about and what we've been working on is conceptuality for how a system can work, or the systemization of the concept, so it just doesn't happen in one place. It can happen in many places. Now this is the issue. We have great minds all over the country. And yes, there's something going on Wednesday with one leader, and there's something going on Thursday with another leader, as my brother George said. But we have to do this. Everybody has to support everybody's everything. What do I mean? Everybody go on everybody's show. Everybody get on everybody's movement. Yes, there needs to be something going on 7 days a week. The phenomenon will occur when there is a hurricane of good works. What do I mean, a hurricane? I mean that if I got to go out here and support my brother on the days that he needs to be supported, and then I need him to turn around and come back and support me, there's no law against love. There's no law against help. There's no law against support. You're not going to lose your pride and your definition by helping somebody radically. You're not going to lose your pride and definition by saying, I'm going to put my name behind somebody else's name. It's called the conglomerate is what it's called. It's called the merger is what it's called.
Right.
And the people that are running this country every day understand that if they come together, their corporation is going to become bigger and bigger and bigger as they merge. We cannot be an island to ourselves. We cannot be isolated in our activities. We have to be congruent, and we have to be cohesive in what we're doing. But this is what I want to say about Little Africa. Little Africa is in the Africans. It's in the African Americans. My brother said, Alex said, if you're looking for a leader, look in the mirror. That's exactly right. You are a nation. Isaiah 60 says that I will make a little one a strong one and a small one a nation, and I, the Lord, will hasten it in its time. When you decide that you're bigger than your problem, when you decide that you're bigger than your issue, that God has not given you the spirit of fear, but he's given you love, power, and sound mind, when you decide that you're going to be something greater than what you've been, you will do it. And not only will you do it, but you will not bow to the oppression or the opposition. But you have to make an inward decision to say, I am going to do this now. I have gained this word. It's called relentless. It's called I will not retract. I will not retreat. I will not back up. If this thing kills me, I will die doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and they will bury me saying that that man went down in motion somewhere. Let me pick this thing up and finish it. And if you have to live like that, it may be living on the edge, and it may be kind of radical, but you have to say, if I'm going to build this business, if it takes my last dime, my last dollar, I'm going to put this thing into this book. And then we got to be savvy. We got to be up with the technology. We can't make everything hard. We got to work smart. We can't do it the hard way. We can't do it the familiar way, the old-time way. We got to get up with this technology, and we've got to do what we're supposed to do in this generation so that they can understand what's really going on and what's really good. We need to put truth in innovation so that it can make it to the generation, because if we don't put it in the medium that they're listening to, they ain't never going to hear this. They're never going to hear this.
Well, you know, I just came up with an idea. When you talk about innovation and you talk about technology, especially when you're dealing with children, wouldn't it be an innovative idea to come up with a game that they could play on Xbox or what is it, PlayStation 3, they could learn how to become successful in their life? And there's different levels to this game. But before they become successful, they have to learn who they are. You know, they'd have to learn about their people, and they'd have to answer questions and get those questions right. You know, another thing I would like to infuse into the conversation, which I was thinking about, George, you work indirectly with the Board of Education. It just occurred to me, you know, when I was looking at your blog, I was thinking about, and all of us on the line here, we're in the same age group. So what I'm about to say, I'm quite sure, is not foreign. Does anybody ever remember having to do current events for school projects on a weekly basis? Do you remember that?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. The kids don't have that anymore.
Nope.
Well, this is something that I encourage all the listeners out there who are parents, just because your children are not being taught a thing in school, you know that when we were in school, we had to produce every, and in actuality, Alex, we went to the same school, so you probably remember what I'm talking about. On Fridays, the only homework usually that we were given, other than studying for an exam, was current events.
And we cut
and
up
we
the
had
Sunday
to
paper.
We had our current events project in on Monday morning.
That's right.
I suggest to all the listeners out there, and thank God that I had the parents that I did, because I was always curious about learning because I was surrounded by books. I wasn't allowed to go outside and play like kids normally went outside and played. So I learned a lot because I read a lot. I encourage all the parents out there to pick up a book, if you're a person of color especially, pick up a book on ancient civilizations and give it to your child, read it with your child, or give it to them to read, you know, so that they can learn about who they are. And also get them in the practice of picking up a newspaper. Because, you know, if they're not going to sit, if they're watching 9 hours of television, as Dr. Hackley pointed out, I'm sure 9 minutes of the television time that they're investing, they're not watching CNN or Fox or the local news.
That's right.
You know, pick up a newspaper for the kids and make them read it and make them read the article to you. And ask them if they understand what the article is talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bree, can I interject something for a minute?
Sure, Bree? And then we're going to go back to George.
Yeah, I want to direct a question to Dr. Hackley, because we're running out of time. It's something I wanted to address last week, and this goes a little bit biblical. After we were released from slavery, we were taught the Bible. We were taught to become Christians. We weren't Christians by nature. We were taught that by our masters. And we were taught that it was used as a tool against us. And what I mean by that is we were taught what they supervised that we be taught. Turn the other cheek. Forgiveness is great. We in the last days. The end is coming soon. Look for your Savior. Taught all of this stuff, right? And while they're out there, other groups are out there getting land, making money, doing all kind of things to generate wealth for their own communities. They had black folk looking in the sky, looking for a Savior. And we refused to fight for what was ours because we looking in the sky. How would you, what would you say to that?
I am so glad you asked me that question because I deal with that directly in this
Okay,
book.
And Dr. Hackley, I'm going to ask you to say it in 2 minutes because I want to go back to George and then I want to close out the show.
All right, in two minutes, the Jesus that was sold to us in slavery has got to be revisited or redefined because I talk about how even Mr. Lynch quotes the Bible in his letter. And this is what's key. I had an epiphany at about 16 or 17. If this God that you're telling me to worship and this way that you're telling me to go is real, he's going to address this struggle that my people have been going through. And if he can't address this struggle, then I can't follow him anymore. That's when I got a real understanding of who that Christ man was that's in the Bible. Now, we can deal with translations, we can deal with all that kind of stuff, but this is what he said to his own disciples, and I hope this answers your question. He said, go not after the lost sheep of the world, don't go outside of your borders. He said he told his Jewish Israeli disciples to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Save your own house first. Now, most people take that in the wrong context. African Americans, they go out here, and then they say, we've got to support Israel. We've got to support the Jews. That wasn't the lesson in what he was saying. The lesson in what he was saying is that if you're going to be a leader in your in God's eyes, spiritually, you have to save your own people first. When I came to that understanding that Jesus wasn't just the Son of God, that Jesus was what I call an apostolic activist, that he was more community-oriented and community-driven, and he was fighting a system himself. And then we have to look at him from another view, and we have to see scriptures from another view, like Solomon, I am black but comely. You know, the woman says in Solomon, there are scriptures like Psalm 82, I have said that ye are gods, and all of you are the children of the Most High. This kind of theology is some people call it kingdom theology, some people call it dominion theology, is beginning to surface because people are no longer accepting just turn the other cheek, just let somebody run you over, just look up in the sky and you're going to fly away. This is not where we are at this time. At this time, we're saying we are looking for oneness with God, and our spirituality has to manifest in this earth realm. And we have to take a responsibility, not for the time that's coming before us, but we have to take a responsibility for our now. So I hope that helps. I hope that helps.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Hackley. George.
Yes.
The state of education right now in New Jersey, in which you live in, why don't you give us a brief snapshot of that and tell us, you know, what is it to be black in New Jersey and dealing with African American children?
Well, first I want to say that all of our children can learn, and any children is capable of becoming anything they want to. But what we as parents have to understand and what I think a lot of parents forget is you are your child's first teacher. You set the tone. If you take education seriously, your child takes education seriously, especially if you're a father. I mean, because you know mom's going to be on you, but when dad follows up, I know everybody doesn't have a father, but men, especially if you're in your child's life, you have to be on the education because mothers are going to do their job. We have to take it seriously. We have to be on top of it. I'm not saying go to every PTA meeting, go to every Board of Education meeting, but if you can go to the club twice a week, if you can go to this party, you can once a month, once every 2 months, make a Board of Education meeting, make a PTA meeting, because you need to know what's going on in your school, because kids are kids. They don't mean any harm, but they're not going to tell you anything. And you as a parent, it's your job. You owe it to your child to do the right thing. And I hate, I'm going to paraphrase Richard Pryor, but I'm going to keep it clean. If you follow a dumb kid home, you're going to find a house full of dumb people. And we have to understand that. We, as parents, set the tone. What we take seriously, what we value, our kids value. Because every smart child, every kid you see getting straight A's, every kid you see on the honor roll, you can get, you know what type of parents they have at home. You know their parents don't play. You know there's no video games or TV till the homework is done. You know that kid doesn't, that kid goes other places besides the movies and the mall. That kid goes to museums. That kid may go to plays. That kid gets to expose to things. The more you're exposed to, the more you learn. So as parents, we have to start, we as a community have to just stop talking about value in education and put money behind it, because the black communities are notorious for not passing school budgets. We have to say, you know what, we have to pass our school budgets, we have to put money behind our kids' education, and we have to be serious about it. I mean, that's the only way I can say it. We have to be more, stop talking about it and do something about it.
Well, at this time, I want to thank the guest panelists. I want to thank George Cook from Hillside, New Jersey, president of the Board of Education in his region. I want to take the time also to thank Dr. Jeremiah Hackley, my guest panelists also, Alex Leith and Gail from Minnesota. And I want to thank all the listeners for listening and continuing to support Bree Life Radio. We can't just know better to do better. We have to also put some things into action. So that's what we're going to do next week on the Bree Life Radio Show, part 3, to what does it mean to be black in America now? Peace and blessings, everyone.
Peace and blessings.
Yeah, yeah. A-Dream in the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
We finna go in. Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the next to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics and race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.